Hi, and welcome to Intercom on Product. With myself, Des Trainer, co-founder of Intercom, and Paul Adams, who's our Senior Vice President of Product. Over the time we've worked together, Paul and I have had countless conversations about things like how to run a product org at scale, how to balance customer feedback on your product roadmap, how to spread a product-first mentality throughout a company, how to maintain design excellence in a fast-growing R&D team, and so much more. In this series, we're going to begin sharing some of these discussions with you on a regular basis, covering everything from industry trends, what's hot right now, all the way through to things like, how are we embracing the rise of automation? So if you're a designer, product manager, engineer, researcher, or anything in between, we think you'll find these conversations really valuable. You can subscribe to Intercom on Product on iTunes, you can stream it on Spotify, or even just grab the RSS feed in your player of choice. Thanks for listening. Welcome to Intercom on Product episode 9. Today, we're going to talk about speed, not the drug, but the idea that your company needs to move fast. Paul Graham once wrote that a startup is a company that is designed to grow fast, and the fast bit is what's most important. I'm joined by Paul Adams, our SVP of Product. Hi, Paul.
Hello there, Des.
Paul, let's talk about speed. One of the guiding principles in Intercom is simply thus, make every day count. Why?
Yeah, it's a great value and principle. We've used it in both ways. The value being every day counts and the principle being make every day count. And when I explain this to people, I often tell the following story. When every employee of Intercom comes up the elevator or lift, if you're here in Ireland or
the UK.
but when you go up the floors to work and go into the office, you can be in very different states of mind. And make every day count is state of mind, in my opinion. And that is that you're going into work, you know exactly what you're going to do that day. You know what a good day looks like. You have goals for that day. And at the end of the day, you kind of reflect on that state of mind and that place you were in, whatever, 8 hours before, and decide whether you had a good day or not. And that should inform how you feel the next morning going into work.
Is there a tension there like that you think day to day, or how do you build up from that?
Yeah, talk about what we have here at Intercom. We have a whole goals framework. We're big into goals. I'm personally also big into goals. I really believe in them. I think that any time in my life personally that I've had goals written down, whether it's like personal goals or professional goals, I've just tended to be better and achieve more. So we're big into goals. We have goals at lots of different time frames. We have annual goals. We have quarterly goals that I'm sure most listeners out there have. We have cycle goals. So in our product engineering team, we work in 6-week cycles. So we split the quarter into two. Mm. So we have cycle goals every 6 weeks, then weekly goals, and then daily goals.
And can you describe maybe what is a goal in that regard? Is it achieve something, ship something, do something? What's the makeup of a goal?
The way that I think about these goals is, well, first of all, that they're SMART goals using a SMART framework. So if people aren't familiar with this, obviously you can have good goals and bad goals. And the SMART framework is a really useful way to set good goals, and that is that a goal is specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. Mm-hmm. And so the goals themselves, we would hope, are always SMART goals. They're good goals. But then it can be about different things, depending what the team is working on or the person's working on. So it might be ship something. It might be achieve a milestone. You know, a designer, for example, might have a milestone around some design thing that they're trying to get done in a certain space of time. The goals should always connect. This is a kind of relevant piece. Like, all these goals aren't individual goals. They all add up to a big picture. So the team would have weekly goals. Typically, the people on the team have daily goals. And then in aggregation, it all adds up and they hopefully achieve what they set out to.
So we follow, like, every Intercom raid has some sense of what they're trying to achieve every day. And that's kind of the essence of make every day count.
Yeah.
In a sense, like, I want to say it sounds like easy. Like, why wouldn't you work this way? And yet at the same time, I do know, like, a lot of people would join Intercom. And like, I don't want to be like self-complimentary here. Maybe just, let's just say, join a startup, and they find themselves kind of somewhat like shocked by the speed of execution.
Yep.
Why is it that, like, when that happens, like, what's going on in larger companies, you think, that makes this not the case? I'm sure they're no stranger to an OKR framework or something like that in larger companies too.
Yeah, there's a lot to this, because you kind of start tipping into culture here as well. You know, Intercom, people that do join typically say that it is very fast. Mm-hmm. And they kind of come in going like, geez, I thought it was going to be fast, but it is very fast here. Mm-hmm. But that brings alongside an intensity too, you know. And so everyday count is the idea that you work hard in a focused way with goals.
Yeah.
Again, like, literally you make every single day count. And if every single person on every single team makes every single day count, the results you will get are incredible. Yeah. But people should then also go home you know, and not work crazy hours. And so what I see often when I go visit other companies that friends work in or colleagues work in, they could be like big institutions like banks or even other startups. People don't have that focus.
Right.
So like I've often been in startups, I'm sure you have too, where like people honestly just like screw around all day.
Yeah.
You know, they're not focused. They're not thinking about goals. They're not thinking about a good day. They're not thinking about going home at a reasonable hour. They're just honestly like messing around, you know, playing table tennis and like all this random shit. And
it's funny, like I am, like we could easily, there's so many different ways and there's so many different Twitter wars we'd accidentally tiptoe into it with this topic.
Probably have.
I'm certain we have in some sense. I don't have any contrarian opinion here, but I do think that like hard work matters. I do think that lots of work matters, but I do also think that like doing lots of errors is often used as a cloak to hide the fact that you're not getting a lot of shit done.
Right.
And I think that's where work-life balance and stuff like that really suffers, because like one of the best definitions of burnout that I see frequently is when like the work that you're doing doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not even like when you describe people like goofing around at startups, like you might be tempted to think that they're just reading Hacker News all day or you know, just talking to their friends on WhatsApp, whatever. But actually, equally meaningless work could be like designing something that's probably never going to ship, that's not really that important for the company, but like spending a lot of time trying to get it done and working in the office till 9 on something that realistically no one really cares about. It's like everyone's P3 mm-hmm. and this P0 project that's actually high impact. And I think like that's the aspect of focus that gets missed whenever people say like, you know, one of our values is, I'll get the exact framing wrong, but I think it's like we value people who work hard or stay focused with a sense of urgency.
Yep.
And the wrong way to read that is that we're like doing these like 70, 80 hour weeks all the time. It's like, it's not at all about that, but it's not like the phrase, I think it was like Muhammad Ali or somebody who said it. It's not about counting the errors. It's about making the errors count. And I think that's the piece I've always indexed on. It's just, how do we make sure that when you choose to work, you're set up to work really, really impactfully? And I think people don't obsess about that as much. And if we brought in a bunch of like bean counters from like a McKinsey type to analyze like performance and productivity, mm-hmm. they'd probably look at things like the door fob swipes or something like, how many hours does the average employee spend at their desk? And it's actually not that. It's like when they're at their desk, do they have everything they need around them to move without friction? And I think that's like, if I could choose to like get an extra 10% of time output or 10% of quality output from anyone in Intercom, I'd take the quality 8 days a mm-hmm. week. You know, I wouldn't even ask them to do 8 days a week, to be clear. We actually work 5 days a week while we're on this topic. Talk about like, well, sometimes the best way to think about the ingredients of something is to work out what the opposite environment is. So mm-hmm. like if you had to make a team work really, really badly and slowly and inefficiently, and I know you have probably seen or observed throughout your career teams in that pattern, what are the ingredients of a shit team, or sorry, not a shit team, but like a shit setup for a good team?
Yeah.
Like how do you get them slow?
Loads of ways. It's very easy, actually. Before I get into that, one quick thing that's kind of interesting to me is something someone said to me recently. I was talking to them here about everyday counts, mm-hmm. make everyday count, this idea that it's a state of mind. They were saying to me, like, hey, hang on a second. All of our product engineering teams have daily stand-ups mm-hmm. with goals. Mm-hmm. Surely by definition, that means that they make every single day count. And I'm like, no, wrong. It's a state of mind. Yeah. Like those people can like come up the lift or elevator, meander into the stand-up, what's going on? Oh yeah, what my goal is blah, 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 back to their desk, go for a coffee. Like it's a state of mind. It's like walking with purpose to the stand-up. Boom, here's my goal. Here's what's going to happen. I guess it's the kind of like intensity, mm-hmm. but it's very, very positive intensity. And then, you know, like you said, we work here very normal hours, Monday to Friday, you know, 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day. And people do not work at weekends here at all. You know, obviously our support team do and so on, but generally the product engineering teams don't. And you leave the intensity behind and you go on about your life. Mm-hmm. So the state of mind thing is really important for people to kind of consider. It's not, you know, the symptoms and these kind of things and causes are quite important to play out.
Yeah.
And then to answer your question directly, like, as you were talking there, like one of the things that struck me is like a lot of this starts at the top and comes from the top. So like the first way, and you kind of alluded to a lot of this already, the first way to get people to move slow is to give them a shite strategy or no strategy or like unclear goals or at the strategic level. And so people, I had this in lots of my career prior to Intercom, honestly, where you're going around in circles.
Yeah, if you're working hard. You're dropped in a desert and told run fast and you're like, which way?
Absolutely. Yeah. You just don't know where you're going. You don't know what the outcome is. Like, and you can sense that some people in the company just don't really think what you're doing is important.
Yeah.
You know, and so strategy is a big one. Like an unclear strategy is one of the kind of prerequisites to moving fast, I think. You must have a sharp, incisive, clear strategy.
Yeah.
And that has to go all the way down. Like the company, like on the podcast before, we talked about the company strategy, the product strategy, right? You can get down into like the team levels and they could have their own strategy and all the stuff should connect together.
Yeah.
Down into the goals and the goals should reflect the strategy. Mm-hmm. You know, this whole, it should be a system that just connects right from top to bottom. That's the kind of first thing that came to mind as you were talking there. What would you add to that?
I think like strategy is a huge piece. I think like any flip-flopping on like sort of direction is like really like people ignore how painful that is. And that's not to say like when new information comes and it changes your thinking, that's totally fine. You have to change your direction, right? Ideally, like you wouldn't have a strategy where it's like, you know, kind of changes with the wind every time you read a new tweet or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But I think something I see even at times internally, but certainly in other companies, whenever like we justify a change, you do actually, you accumulate a lot of cost of swirl. Like it's almost like we've been running fast in this direction, now after changing the direction, and like some of the decisions we made along the way are now no longer valid. Like almost when you want to make a significant change, you almost need to do a form of like retrospective archaeology of like, hey, if we had known this all along, would we definitely have still started engineering this way? Would we have built this feature in that way? And sometimes you need to go back to root and be like, all right, turns out our last seven assumptions were wrong based on what we think we know now. So I think like any sort of flip-flopping there is quite expensive. Another thing I think is like people don't interrogate enough is like principles and processes. Like we've talked about principles and processes a lot. We've like, we're like riddled with the things, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think they all have to like sing for their supper. And if you're carrying one of these things along, like, oh, well, we have this old ritual where we do blah, or like you're not allowed to do X until you do Y or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things are like scar tissue or whatever. They're baggage. And the only reason they're worth their salt or worth their weight in salt is if they actually guarantee you a level of consistency such that you can continue to move fast because you can depend on things happening, or if they speed you up. But when I reference like the bureaucratic treadmill that like other people will end up on in larger companies, it's one of those like the mythical TPS reports of the Office Space movie or whatever. It's like, hey, there's a load of things I need to do, but first I have to do this other whole heap of meta space things, like which are like not valuable, but they're things you do as part of trying to get things done, right?
Yeah.
And I do like, I frequently try to interrogate like what's going on if we have principles or processes that people don't believe in. And the best sign you can find that they don't believe in them is they don't do them.
Right.
Or they work around them, or they give them lip service, right?
Yeah.
You chase down, like we have a document called an intermission, which is how you begin every project. And, you know, we have like a written culture where you try to communicate what you're starting to do at the start of every project. And as occasionally we'll find, hey, like people have stopped filling out the section on whatever it could be. It could be like, what's the story to our customers? What's the story to the press?
Yeah.
What's the revenue impact? But whenever people stop doing it, and you're assuming best intent that like this is a good person, a good PM, a good EM, whatever, then you have to assume the process isn't worth doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only alternative. But I do think there's like processes and principles, they enter this sort of like haloed land where like no one wants to, because if I want to question everyday counts, I'm actually questioning our SVP of product, Mr. Paul Adams. How dare I, right? And if, but at the same time, if you're like Joey Bag of Donuts, new engineer walking in here, and you're like, this whole thing makes no sense, I have a much faster way to get shit done.
Yeah,
I want you to question Paul Adams.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he wants it too, you know?
Yeah.
So I do think like it's very easy for like the point here at boss analysis to be like, we all need to work harder, crack the whip more or whatever. But actually, maybe you just haven't set them up for speed. Maybe it's bad principles, bad processes, potentially bad other people. Maybe it's collaborative bottlenecks that you haven't acknowledged. Maybe you're incentivizing people the wrong way. Maybe you've taught people the way you have most impact for your company is to do this, but the way you get promoted is to do this other thing. And if those two things aren't the same thing, that's a real big problem. You'd be shocked how often that happens though. I'm trying to think of other examples. Like I'd say like there's a lot of like, I want to call like low hanging fruit around this that I think our listeners would be way more familiar with, especially if they're in a smaller company. Like, yes, having a design pattern library helps because it means you don't have to reinvent the wheel every time we want to come up with a new Salesforce integration.
Yeah.
Yes, having like a velocity risk register helps. And actually, we should probably get our engineers to talk more about this. But this is our engineers document anything that is basically slows them down from getting code to production. Mm-hmm. Anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally we measure things in seconds as to like, when you're ready to go, how long before it hits production? And we have like, oh, is it the test suite? Is it this? Is it Amazon? What is it?
Right.
All of our technical setup. So they're all like the ingredients of shit that will just slow you down.
Yeah.
And every single one of them is kind of worthy of investigation because I think there's so much low-hanging fruit that people otherwise accept you know, it is dangerous to just assume that the company's perfect and it's the people that aren't working fast enough. It's almost always the other way around. If you're hiring good people, which generally you like to think you are.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. When you were talking there about principles and process, one thing that struck me was, you know, like what is speed about, mm-hmm. or what, you know, to your earlier question, like how do you generate speed? And at some level you could say like, it's just decision-making basically. Mm-hmm. And then the question is like, what do people have to make decisions about? Mm-hmm. And the best thing, or one of the best things about having a great set of principles, mm-hmm. which I'll get into more in a second, and a great process, is that it takes away a lot of decision-making. Mm-hmm. So for example, you know, we want people just to be making decisions about the product, yeah. right? The thing we're making,
yeah.
not about like, how do we do this? And, mm-hmm. you know, if people have better, like you say, if people have better ideas, we try and encode them, but you want people making decisions about the product and not having to think about like all the stuff mm-hmm. that surrounds it. And one of the big things, you know, that we're kind of thinking a little bit about internally at the minute around our principles and process, again, like a principle being, you know, the way we generate our principles is that we take what we've learned over the course of the years and we see successes, we see failures, and we try and encode the successes yeah. to repeat them and then avoid the failures, try and encode them in a principle that we can then teach to people. Mm-hmm. And the process is simply a set of steps, you know, take it in a sequence that helps people follow the principles. But you have to also understand that, you know, time moves on and you start to learn more things and you start to have to revisit these principles, revisit this process, and then encode the new learnings into mm-hmm. it. So there is a balance here. But for the most part, what we would want people to do is, you know, if they're we have like 9 stages yeah. in our process. And if they're at, you know, stage 4, which is like clearly documented, here's how it works, you don't want them thinking about it and, you know, like interrogating it. You just want them to like do it. Which, by the way, for the most part, if people buy into the principles, is win-win. Mm-hmm. You know, people would much prefer to talk about the work.
How do you think about the ROI of a principle or a process? Like, when's it worth keeping? Like, I was trying to work out what's the calculus around it. It's kind of like, is it like the cost of this going wrong is pretty high, therefore it's worth inserting a step. Like every step and every principle, if we ask people to follow it, they all cost something, right? Nothing's mm-hmm. free in this world.
Yeah.
So if we have a stage called show your designs to our design director or whatever, that costs us time.
Yeah.
That's like at least a half an hour on a calendar. It's going to slow you down, right?
Yeah.
So why do it? Well, it's what stops substandard design going live, or variant design, like design that doesn't follow brand guidelines or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But like, how do we think about, is that worth it? And are we trying to limit, like maximize upside, limit downside? How do you think about, like, you're in the middle of this right now, like you're going to delete some processes and probably add some processes.
Yeah.
What's the decision-making there?
Like, there's art and science to this. I'm not going to pretend there's some kind of like hard-coded or like, you know, hardened mathematical way to do it. The design director thing's interesting. So, you know, like, and by the way, like our stages are kind of, you know, higher level than that. But if there was a mm-hmm. thing that said, hey, at this point in time, you must go to your design director as a designer, show them your work, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, the reason that we would do that is because we've learned somehow that that's the right thing to do at the right time. So there's kind of 2 dimensions at play. One is time, like as a project moves along in time, the type of work changes, you get into the details and like unknowns move into knowns or whatever. Then there's like zoom level. So like there's like up and down. So from designer to design manager to design director to like whatever, VP. And so you got to get the right, you got to like marry the right zoom level with the right time frame. And so, you know, and I'm sure most people would agree with this, you don't want the design director reviewing the design work late in the process. Right. That because then you get back into some of the stuff you were talking about at the beginning, which is like
flip-flopping,
major course correction.
Yeah.
So you're trying to, encode what you've learned about things like flip-flopping into the process so that the right things happen at the right time.
So the decision there, it sounds like, and I know you're giving me the whole art and science lark, which to me usually just says, don't ask me for any science. But like the scientific part you maybe are appealing to there is actually the relatively low cost of a quick check-in with the design director versus the relatively high cost times whatever the probability is of it going wrong, the trade-off is worth it, right? Like as in, if we don't do this, there's a small chance that we lose a month.
Yeah.
If we do it, there's a guaranteed chance that we lose a half an hour.
Yeah.
And you'll take the guaranteed loss of half an hour over the marginal chance of the month, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's iron sensing is interesting because I actually think that...
I have a bugbear with that phrase because whenever someone hits me with art and science, I'm like, right, so you don't really want to justify what you're doing.
That's what I said it to, like, Dev, please don't ask me that. It's kind of funny though, now that we're on it, because I actually think our principles and process and how we've come around them is actually quite scientific.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the classic, you know, the way you kind of prove anything. You kind of like, you know, make observations and then synthesize what you see and, you know, deduce patterns from that and then try and apply some thing that will make you utilize those patterns in the future. And so all of our principles and all of our process is based on observation. Yeah. It's based on like a dedication to learning.
Yeah.
And this new kind of go around we're kind of in the midst of now, which is like, hey, let's have a rethink, which is, you know, I've said to the team, like, hey, this is like evolution, not revolution. We're not going to like radically change things, but we do need to evolve a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on observations.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lauren and our PM team who's driving this at the minute is interviewing people.
Yeah.
She's surveying people.
Yeah.
You know, so it is actually interestingly that kind of quite scientific now that we're on it.
Here's like a scorpy take, let's say.
Yeah.
You introduce process to work around the variance in people. So if you've got like lots of people who are at an extreme spectrum of ability, you'll have to do lots of process. If all your team are just A players, you need less process, right? Some amount of that feels like it's true. Like, as in, we don't have a principle called or a process called, it's really important at this stage in the product that we don't do shit work, right? Like, you know, generally speaking, we try to believe people are doing good work.
Yeah.
How do you distinguish between something that's worth a conversation with an individual to say that's substandard versus something that's worth saying, hey, we actually need to tell everyone about this?
Right.
And let's processize it so it never happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, these are big questions. Another way to kind of think about this space is that you're minimizing risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like principles and process exist to minimize risk.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's risky? Oh, like people going off track. Like, you know, bad people doing bad work. Oh, we hired the wrong person. They're not for us. You know, all sorts of myriad things. So like, I don't really know how to answer that question. For the most part, it's here, like on a case by case basis, there's a lot of judgment required. Like if someone like doesn't follow a stage correctly, like let's just continue the designer example. Like, you know, if a designer does some bad work, there's a whole host of reasons why they might have done bad work. Like for a start, we mightn't have taught them well.
Yeah.
Hey, here's how we think about this stage. Here's what's expected. Here's what good looks like. Mm-hmm. Now, these are actually real things that come up. So for example, we have one of our principles is think big, start small.
Mm-hmm.
And for think big, like you mentioned, intermission is our project brief. We actually call things everything inter. Interconcept is our think big. So, you know, conceptual design, I'm sure lots of people are familiar with it. You kind of think big, design some kind of concept car. And the thing that constantly comes up is, how big is big?
Mm-hmm.
And unless we teach people well, and we've done that well and poorly over the years, unless we teach people well, here's how to think big. Here's too big. Mm-hmm. Here's not big enough. With real examples from real projects, unless they've been taught well, well, of course they're not set up to succeed.
Yeah.
So, you know, and people, someone else could have been taught really well
and
they just can't do it.
That's, I guess what I'm trying to avoid is like, and a lot of our listeners will be familiar with this, is like that you scar on every single cut. Like every time something goes wrong, new principle, new process. And then you end up with like employee onboarding pays the cost because it's like, welcome to Intercom. Please read these 7 epic tomes.
Yeah.
Each the length of a Game of Thrones style book or whatever, all about how not to make mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, and by the end of it, like, you know, I think if you close the error bars in so tight, the probability of anyone doing anything good goes away pretty well as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of things, you know, I'm kind of drifting off into all sorts of spaces here. But as you talk there as well, another thing that strikes me about this is, you know, we believe in like a growth mindset that people can grow and learn and everyone really can come in the door and like adapt and change. And we give everyone that license to do so. But what comes, you know, and this is like kind of like the kind of du jour, you know, topic du jour of our times, like growth mindsets and open, transparent organizations, etc. But the flip side of this is if you really believe in growth mindset, you have to be quite resilient because you're right. Like, you know, you kind of scar every time. Like if you're constantly getting feedback about how to work, how these principles work, what's right, what's wrong, not this is big, that's too small. You need to be incredibly resilient to embrace all those things. So there is certainly like interesting dynamics at play where the process and the principles can go too far.
Yeah, I think so. And like, that's why the way in which it goes too far is it starts to defeat its own purpose, right?
Yeah.
So like, if you're a 10-person company right now, you've like maybe 2,200 person days in a year. And we're saying you have to make every single one of them count.
Yeah.
However, if you think of like, say, how often does this process get applied? Let's say it's design, review, create, product forum, whatever. Each of those is going to be it's like an hour a week for like what, 10 people. Okay, so that's 10 hours a week times 50, right? You start handing back all of the so-called efficiency gains you make, you hand back in terms of processizing the shit out of your product process.
Yeah.
Or like the manner in which you get stuff into the hands of your customers. And I think whilst I'm all in and you're all in on principles and process, and we're all in on make every day count, we have to recognize there is a kind of a tension there. And like every principle, every process needs to like earn its keep. It needs to actually be something that speeds you up, and certainly never something that is actually net negative. Mm. And that's the thing I'd be most paranoid about.
Yeah, it's interesting to connect some of the kind of threads that we've just crossed over the last while. One thing that is really, really fascinating to me always is, what do people talk about? Mm-hmm. Right, like asking yourself the question, what do my team talk about? When I'm not there, or even when their manager's in there, like, what do people mm-hmm. talk about? And it comes back to the idea that like speed is decision-making. Mm-hmm. So like, how fast can you make decisions? And then what do people talk about actually also directly impacts how fast you make decisions. If people are talking about the process, mm-hmm. then they're not making decisions. Yeah. And worst case, if people are talking about the process in a negative light, yeah. like it's one thing to say, oh my, I really don't understand this process, help me, mm-hmm. right? They're not making decisions, so they're slower. So the education is really important. But then like worst case scenario is that they're talking about how the process is shit or doesn't work yeah. or they're being forced to do
or
it.
Or how do you subvert it or whatever, right?
Yeah, and so like, you know, to your question, like how do you know if it's working earlier? Yeah. I think the biggest thing is you need to learn what people are talking about.
Like it's almost, yeah, I think it's that combined with like, I really do think it's worthwhile instrumenting the processes to see how often they're applied to make sure that it's really worth it. Because it's easy to sort of say, sure, let's agree step 14 is definitely going to be a check-in with Des, right?
Yeah.
But when you realize step 14 times, like whatever, we want to have like 600 like software projects in a year, mm-hmm. it's a shitload of time.
Yeah.
And the fact that it doesn't happen instantly either, it's going to yeah. be like the whole team is probably blocked until Des's calendar is freed up. Like there's so many like hidden costs to these things
yeah.
that like that's why they need to be really good and yeah. really, really solid. Anyway, yeah. we better leave it there. This has been Intercom A Product, and we'll see you all next month.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Intercom On Product podcast. For more content, go to our blog at intercom.com/blog or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or Stitcher.